Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
The Paris-born Fab Mauvin first met future partner Rob Pilatus in Munich at a local club. Starting a rock and soul band together, naming it Milli Vanilli, the two penniless kids jumped at the chance to sign a contract with German producer Frank Farian, and within months they had created a captivating stage show that would prove to amaze millions. Selling more than 7 million copies of their debut album Girl You Know It's True in the US alone, the duo went on to MTV stardom, becoming one of the biggest musical acts of the 90s with worldwide sales of more than 30 million singles and 10 million albums. Along the way, the two were involved in a notorious lip-syncing scandal that led them wanting to publicly return their Grammy for Best New Artists. The premiere of the VH1 series Behind the Music put a spotlight on the tale, turning out to be one of its highest-rated segments. Fab's incredible true story is inspirational, a tribute to his own indomitable spirit in the face of one of the most controversial events in modern pop music history. His amazing ability to keep reinventing himself without bitterness and continue to follow his muse music makes for a remarkable uplifting saga told as only he can with his own hard-earned wisdom and music. He proves it in Luke Corem's remarkable documentary Milli Vanilli, presented by Paramount Plus and MTV, the definitive version of what actually happened. Girl You Know It's True, the documentary and movie bring the story up to date and set the stage for a promising future. The movie was released in Europe, starting with Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and then in the USA, Latin America, and South Africa. Up next on Celeb Savant, telling the Milli Vanilli story and his upcoming appearance at the Turn Back the Time Music Festival in South Africa, is Fab Mauvin. Where do we find you in the world, and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good right now. I'm in Spain. I go Holland, Spain. I'm in between, but right now I'm in Spain right now. You know, sun is shining. The summer is at the, you know, we're at the end of summer. So in Europe, they're feeling the cold is being coming. They're feeling it. I get the calls. Oh my God, how hot is it over here? Well, still pretty good. So we can't complain, you know.
Okay, let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the music or entertainment world, creative world? And how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
Well, I think that, you know, it has everything to do with my schooling. As a young Fabrice Mauvin, not the young Fab, I was very much into art. So I was taken to the Louvre, Versailles, at an early age, and I kept going back myself when I was of age to go there and just sit there and just enjoy art. I've always been a creative kid from nature. Music was in my family DNA. My grandfather played an accordion in
yes.
French. That's it, accordion. And I was always fascinated by what would happen when he would play the music with the band. So my parents, you know, your parents, suddenly they turn into children. They're like, wow. So the power of music, to me, I grabbed onto it and gravitated towards that energy. And I didn't know why, but it made me feel happy. But also, I was questioning, like, how did that happen? That suddenly my parents, who were very, very strict, very serious, and then suddenly they would turn into children in front of me. I was like, wow, that's interesting. And just with notes and music, sounds of music, people singing. So I, at an early age, I told my mom, oh, that's what I want to do. She was like, no, you ain't. That's not a job. I was like, what do you mean? It's not a job. You know, and one of my uncle had attempted to go into the music industry and it didn't end up well for him. You know, so that's, she was like, you see what happened? Don't let that happen to you. So forget that music industry early on. But I never forgot about it. And, you know, I come from a Caribbean background. So every summer when we go on vacation, you know, you'd have my grandpa with the accordion. And then, you know, they would take spoons or whatever was around, guitars, and they would sing, you know, traditional songs and would jump in. So it was always like The music was always a part of a celebration. It seems like it made people happy. I love that part because I came from a divorced family, and I noticed that, you know, while my parents were going through a divorce, I would always put my Walkman. You remember those Walkmans?
Yes.
I put the Walkman on. I put my roller skates on, and I would go through Paris, and I would go back to the Louvre, and I would go to Versailles, and there I would lose myself in art, you know, going to the Picasso Museum, and just lose myself through music and art. That's what I think led me to being on the creative side.
So what were the next steps? How did Milli Vanilli come to be? I know it was quite a challenging experience and quite a challenging journey. So what was the Milli Vanilli story for you?
Well, what happened is that I went to Germany. I met Rob. We both had the same dream. So we entered the music industry by working with various producers. And when people heard from us and we were playing in town with a live band, those musicians used to work for Frank Farian. And then I guess our name was brought up to Frank Farian. And from there, it led us to Mr. Frank Farian and his studio and sitting down with him and coming to the studio where gold records, platinum records on the wall. So you're like, wow, this is the place to be. Signing a contract that was written in German. There was no attorney present, no management. I'm French, mind you, but I'm signing a contract in German with no protection. The only question I asked Rob was like, hey, are we okay? He's like, yeah, it's cool. Money's on the table. So I guess it's going to be a real thing. He's signing a recording contract, but we didn't know that it was for three albums. We thought it was for one single, but it was the three albums. So when we signed the contract, they took the last three pages and gave us the three pages, not the whole thing. That's how naive we were. We didn't know. So they're just like, yeah, you sign right here, which is like a little sneaky, but we didn't know nothing. We had a dream and we wanted to get in there and live that dream.
What does the name Milli Vanilli mean? Where does it come from?
It means nothing.
Okay.
It goes back to Scritti Politti.
And yes.
Scritti Politti was,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You heard phonetically how it sounds,
yes.
Scritti Politti. And this is where we took that phonetic phrasing from. Milli was the name of the girlfriend of Frank Farian. Vanilli, we used to go to Italy and get gelato, ice cream, all the time. So we're like, okay, you know, I'm dark skin, he's light skin, vanilla. Okay, it's Scritti Politti, Vanilli. And then, you know, somehow Milli Vanilli, you know. And at first, it was like, yeah, that sounds like an ice cream. That sounds cool. You know, that sounds exotic. It kind of like, it fits, you
yes.
know, but you never know. And then, but people always were asking, who's Milli, who's Vanilli? And I was like, well, that's just the name of the group.
Yes.
You know, it happened to Pink Floyd. Who's Pink, who's Floyd?
Yeah.
It was just the name of the group. And at first, you know, you can come up with a name that's kind of like, we don't know about that. But through time, it seems like people love to say the name, whether it's Spanish people, Italian people, the French. It just rolls nicely on your tongue.
You guys wanted to live the dream, create the dream for your world. It was an explosion of music, of dance, of all different elements. Did you guys expect the success that came through? Or was it a situation of, we've been working hard, we've been laying the foundation, and it's the next step after that?
No, we had no idea how the industry worked. But let's rewind a little bit. When we were asked to lip sync and we said no, and then we were told, well, you got to pay us back, then we were like, what do you mean? You know, we got that money, we spent it already. Yeah, but it's not free. Money isn't free. Ah, so when we were explained that, it was like, okay, so how do we pay you? Because we can't get a job and get that kind of money. Because through the month, it was for us poor kids, we were struggling. We couldn't repay that. So the easiest solution was like, okay, we just do this one single and then we're out. That was the whole idea behind that, because we realized that wasn't the right place to be. They tricked us. And, you know, if someone tricks you and you realize it, well, and we had to repay that debt. So we stayed. But then the record exploded. And that's when, you know, this life of a rock star, the addictive and seductive part of the life of a rock star is insane, especially if you're young. We never had a problem with ladies. Don't get me wrong. When that came around, that record came around, and you were in a video on television, it changed everything. It's like you can enter any clubs, you travel by car, limousines, you're on planes, you're in a hotel. If you're hungry, you dial a number, the food comes up. I mean, you talk to someone, the food comes up 20 minutes later, boom. And that was for us who were struggling. Suddenly that you just had to press the number, talk to someone, and the food would be in your room, and then someone would clean your room if it was messed up. That was like, wow. You know, so we wanted to sing on a second single, of course. Like, but we were told, like, no, you can't do that. That people are gonna, but mind you, the first single, Girl Knows True, and Baby Don't Forget My Number, were not rapped by the same person. I don't know if you know that.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
So it was a different rapper. So, you know, we were trying to fight our way in, but they were not going to let us in. So the only thing we could do really was to stay the course and try to find a way to, if there would be an opportunity to jump ship and go somewhere else. And there was another opportunity for us to do that. Because one of the reasons why the Milli Vanilli train stopped is because we pushed them to a brink so that it would let us go. But we didn't count. I didn't count. We knew he was a vengeful person, very smart, very shrewd. But when he went to New York and told the world, oh, they didn't sing a lick on the record, instead of saying, okay, I'm done working with you, go work something somewhere else. Let's see what you're gonna do. No. It took, again, for the second time, he took that opportunity away from us by putting us into the world saying, no, they didn't sing. When Kate, in fact, he paid everyone. He created this whole concept, which he did with Boney M and Bobby Farrell, which he did the vocals with for, right? Yeah. So then here we were thinking, okay, we're going to push him to a brink. He's going to let us go so we can start another career fresh and people will see what we're made of. But no, he was like, no. I took you in. I'm going to take you out. And you're not going to have a career. So from that point on, we were blacklisted. Of course, no one wanted to touch Milli Vanilli. It was like we were like lepers. And from that point on, having to survive this journey was like self-discovery. And this is why I went to rehab, Rob as well. The difference is when we went to rehab, I listened and took it in and understood that if I didn't do the work for myself, I would end up somewhere else. And I was even told, like, you know, your friend is a little further than you in this addictive behavior. And I knew that, you know. But I said, by you being close to and wanting to take care of him, you're becoming codependent.
Yes.
You know, and codependency is a hard place to be because you're trying to help. But in the end, I was told, and I understood that too, that you got to do it for yourself. No one can do it for. But I tried, and when I understood, tough love, let him figure it out. It's for him to do it. There's three options: hospital, jail, or the cemetery. I was always warned. They said, hey, let him do what he does, but you have to know that at some point it could end up there. And it could end up for you there too. So that's why I took it seriously. And music was always something that I carried deeply in my DNA. So I went back to work. I went back to the drawing board, learned how to play guitar, learned how to write. And I could have gone back to friends with my tail between my legs, be like, okay, I think I'm cooked. But I stayed the course. I faced the music, you know, no pun intended. And music told me, all right, so you want to stay right here? Okay, show me and prove me that you're worth that. And I worked really hard through the years, really, really, really hard. But I have to go back to 1993 where we did the Rob and Fab album, which we co-wrote many of the songs. Co-produce as well with teams of producers. And that was one of my favorite time because it was very therapeutic, healing. And I was like, I always knew I could do this. It's just I was stopped from doing it. And then from there on, I continued on this journey of writing and producing and staying in there. And then in the end, at the end of this record, we performed at Arsenio. You should check it out. That performance was a very nice one. And we were dancing, singing. And I tell people, because sometimes some ignoramus, some people have drank the Kool-Aid. And the old narrative has been of, oh, they can't sing. And people really believe that. So I'm like, when I go back to 1993 and you see that performance and you listen to the record, it's like, what do you mean they can't sing? You know, so 1 + 1 = 2. But because of the way the media was structured, there was only four pipeline. So once the narrative was introduced to the audience, to the people, that was it. You couldn't overturn. There was no social media where you could say, hey, hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up. This is not what it is. Let me talk to you guys. But you didn't have that tool. So once that was written, you were cooked. So I had to wait throughout the years and do what I could with like sitting down with people. And I felt more comfortable with the language, with telling my story, exposing myself as well. Because every time you tell the story, you go back in time. And
Yes.
those scars were very fresh. And then when Rob died, that was even more crazy because the one person that knew exactly what it felt like was gone. So the one
Yeah.
person that could relate to me on that level wasn't here anymore. It forced me to really get myself together. And I use music, songwriting, producer as the therapeutic system for myself. And then I wrote an album called Love Revolution. And in there, I even wrote a song for him that it was a letter first that I wanted to send to him that I left with him. And I don't know if you read it. I don't know if you get to him, but I decided, you know what? I should do homage. You know, I should, you know, do something to keep him in my life, in my memory, in my spirit. And I wrote this song called It's Your Life, where I talk about drug addiction and telling him, hey, you know, it's your life. You know, just you can change. I've done it because I was able to transition into reality. Because what happens with addiction, you kind of get lost because you consume drugs and then you're totally lost. But it has everything to do with the fact that you're in pain and you were trying to numb yourself from feeling that pain. That's what it was. And back then, mental health was not something that you could talk about. You had to like, oh man, you had to spend money. It was not something that, and it was not really truly understood. I didn't get the concept. I only got the concept of mental health when I went to rehab and I understood. I read some books when I was there and I was given some writers' names, some authors, and I kept on that road of self-improvement. And that's the only reason really why I was able to travel through time and be as happy as I am today. You know, because I recognize that mental health and physical are interconnected. And I was also told by a doctor, he's like, hey, you know, I've seen people come and go, but without your health, you won't be able to put the work in. And there's also such a thing as your fans. If you don't look kind of like what you used to look like, people will be like, ah, pobrecito, poor dude. And I've seen, living in LA, I've seen a lot of people that looked just gutted by the industry, you know, the life, the lifestyle, the pain, the mistakes that you make, you know, by surrounding yourself by the wrong people and then being betrayed by those very people. And it's a lot of that. And show business is ugly. You know, so I learned the hard way. You know, very few people got a chance to live through what I've lived through. And especially not the way up, but the way down. The
Yeah.
way down. And very few people get to just from one day to the next, you're now regarded as a fraud. You know, you feel ashamed. You know, you're afraid to come out. You know, you look at people smiling, but is it a smirk? There's a difference between a smile and a smirk,
Yeah.
you know, all those things. So, you know, and that's why I say music saved my life. You know, music is life and the soundtrack of our lives. And I went back to that in moments of loneliness and being lost. playing my old records, you know, like whether it was Earth, Wind & Fire, whether it was Jackson 5, the Furious 5. I just went back to listening to the stuff that I used to listen to when I was a kid. And then it made me feel good. And I realized that we always played music back then, but now I was not doing anything. And no extracurricular activities. That was done. I was clean. And music had this therapeutic and medicine-like effect on my soul. And I was like, man, every time I'm around music, whether I play it, whether I make it, whether I write it, makes me feel good. So I guess this is the way, because when I tell my story, I speak to people, but it was not that easy to go from A, B, C, D. It was not that easy to go through that. I had to really like sense it, feel it. Is it really for me? Because I know some people were saying, so, but why do you want to stay in the music industry? Why? I was asked that and I said, because I love it. I love music. But it was funny the way the question was asked, because it was as if like, get out of here. You had your time. Why do you want to continue? But I'm like, if you love something so much and it makes you feel good, why should I do something else?
Exactly.
You know, so that's why I stayed.
Thank you so much for your honesty and truthfulness. We really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Appreciate
man.
it. Do you feel that if the situation happened when social media was around, that it would have had a different end result?
Total different. Because, you
Okay.
know, with social media, anybody has control now. You know,
Yes.
it's not like, you know, when back in the days they interviewed you, you answered, they put it out there, and that's it. There's no way, hey, I want to come back tomorrow because I want to
Yes.
address that too. No, it's done. So now you can take your phone, bam, and you can go, hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Barrett right now, and he just asked me that one question. You know? You could do that right now.
Yeah.
I mean, is that crazy or what? But you have power now. You can
Yeah.
definitely, let me tell you, the company that I was working with made $300 million of Robin Fab. That money was reinvested, I won't say the name, in some of the most successful labels in America. The majority of those artists in the 90s are the soundtrack of the 90s, 100%. But now, if you go back and look at what happened to all those artists that were on those labels, it's crazy. Everyone is down and out. The majority, I would say 5% of those artists, a lot of them are dead. Because of what happened, because of the abuse that took place, you know, because of them not being paid, the royalties being withheld, signing the wrong things, not knowing, oh, that's my money. Someone knew, like, oh, I'm going to get you publishing, you know, because publishing music industry is like your retirement. No, a lot of those artists, their publishing was signed away. So it's kind of weird. Like, so what happened to me? Happens to a lot. It's just because I sold so many records and was exposed this way, people get to know my story. But what happened to the 20 or 30 artists that are still on the radio and the money is still generated by whoever holds, you know, that's percentage. You know, so I feel blessed. I feel very lucky that I'm still here, that I can talk to you know, and that there is a life after Milli Vanilli. There is a life. And now we did the documentary, which was very educational. We told the story. And now, after all those years, now people are starting to like, oh, wait a second. One plus one equal two, not three. But now they're getting it. People are more savvy. Social media has brought a certain knowledge to the average person understanding. And if you listen to some of the stories that are coming out here and there, whether it's Britney Spears, that was an ugly story. Her own father had her sign some papers where she had control over nothing. How crazy is that? And the list goes on, you know? So it's ugly. It's ugly. Even your family member will go as far as just like, no, I'm going to take control of the money you generate and I'm going to benefit from it. But I'll sacrifice you.
It's all ego and greed, and eventually those people are hurting others in some way or other. It'll come back to them, whether they realize it or not. It's interesting because when the cycle or circle comes back, it's not always in the exact same way that they did to others. So they don't always realize that that is a result of those actions they did then. And then they keep going through the same thing over again because they don't learn the lesson.
Yeah. I mean, you said it right. And you know, when you're the one that's being abused, or, you know, it's like, it's so painful. And sometimes I thought, just like what you said, you think like, are they going to pay the price one day? At least one day? Why did it happen to me? But I decided to get away from the victim, you know, because once you get out of like, oh, poor me, and broke the cycle and forgive myself, forgive the people who did bad to us, then finally I was like, I felt free. I was like, oh, I feel better. I forgave myself. But for a long time, I carried that burden on my shoulders, like, oh my God. And it was messing me up. So because of the reading before, because of understanding this whole process, I was able to free me. But then year after year, I would see something. I was like, oh, you're getting yours. It might have taken 30 years, but oh, wow, it's happening. Okay, karma handles this business. That's it. Karma will handle this business. So it puts a smile on my face and I'm like, okay, I don't even have to think about them. I said, the universe will handle you. And what I can do is me, I live by love. Love is one of the most powerful energies there is. And I finally got a chance to love myself again. And when I was able to do that, then I freed myself from everything else. Because when people bully you the way that I was bullied, man, the emotional scars go deep, you know, because you have no protection, you know. And especially when Facebook came around as well, it was kind of weird. I was like, I didn't want to join in because it's like, well, if I put myself out there, people are going to write me and like, oh, it could be negative. But I realized that it wasn't that. And as much as the press had written this old school narrative, the fans never left. But I didn't know that. And the only way I had an inkling that they hadn't leave is that I went back to the office of my management, because they would say, you know, come get some of the stuff you have here. You have some boxes here. Fans have written letters. I was like, okay, cool. And I would go to the office, but it would be wall to wall. And I was like, I don't live in the same place that I live at. I live in a small apartment. I can't take that. I don't have any space. But I took a couple bucks and I read. And this, and when I read this, I was like, oh, wow. So they never left. You know, we're there for you. And then from time to time, I would take one a day, you know, to try to, you know, make myself feel better and be like, and it was heartfelt and it was genuine. But for a long time, I didn't know about that. I had no idea. You know, so I think that, you know, still a small percentage of people are still haters, but you can't please everyone. That's just the way it is. And once you've learned that too, you're free, man. I'm not, why do I have to please you too?
And they're actually just projecting insecurities and things within them that they're not willing to look at themselves in the mirror for.
Yeah, you're right. As a matter of fact, because I checked the comments, very interesting for me to see how people react. And I saw this comment where this guy said, I'm very sorry for feeling like I felt towards you because I didn't know. And I'm like, nice. They didn't know. You know, the press delivered a narrative and you bought it. That's it. So right now for me, it's a renaissance. It's a wonderful period of my life because they know now. Yeah. People are realizing step by step.
Because people take the media and the press as what they say is the truth and this is it. And it's not that. The press can edit out a few words or a sentence here and there. And it makes the narrative look in a certain way like they did with you. People never used to question it. These days, more people are questioning it, but a lot are still not. They're like brainwashed.
That's the word. I like to use that word. But listen, you know, there is a type of people who go to school and study journalism. And a journalist they're there in the front line to protect humanity and society. So when you become a journalist, you make an oath that you will impartially investigate each and every character in the story that you're writing about. But when the press conference happened in America, when we gave back the Grammy, I'm telling you, the amount of vitriol that was in the room was incredible. And it was like, but what happened to investigative journalism? Did you research? Like, it was not just, so we were used as scapegoats, but they didn't care about that. They were like, no, we're going to put it all on you because we're not going to go after those big companies because we still want to interview Whitney Houston. We still want to interview some of those artists that are on those labels. So we're not going to ruffle their feathers. We're just going to go after Robin Fett. That's the way to go. And maybe I can get famous, maybe, if I'm aggressive enough, if I push him, you know, and you get to react. Ah, I asked, like, ah, that was me, you know. So it was very weird in that room. And I was very disappointed that they pinned everything on us. And then the label ended up going their way, the producer, and made their money, stay in the industry, and got to abuse other artists. Use them, and then when it was not good anymore, like, oh, let's throw them to the trash. You know, incredible.
Fab, let's redirect our focus onto something more exciting and positive. So you're going to be performing at the Turn Back the Time Music Festival in Johannesburg, South Africa, at the end of September, coming up shortly. I will potentially be speaking more with you at the event and in South Africa when you are here. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I would say, whatever you want to accomplish, anything is possible. You just have to put the work in. Once you put the work in, because you can't do it alone, some people will recognize your value. So then you can team up with someone. Make sure that whoever comes into your circle of trust, you have to be able to trust them. If you have to make business decisions, make sure you get an attorney that will protect your interest. It's very important. Your mental and physical health is very important because health is everything. If you focus on your health, anything is possible because your mind is clear. So you can't and choose something you love to do in life because it's not a job. Then becomes a chore if it's not something that you love. So you can divide yourself in two. You do the chores, the work that you don't want to do during the day, but at night or whatever, design your life in a way that you can pursue your interests that you really want. And then slowly but surely, you know, and of course, everyone has to make money. You also have to make money, you know, so that's also. So follow your dreams. Don't let up. It's never too late. And believe that you can make it happen. No matter what people say, it's up to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.